Canucks Central Monday. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah here in the Kintech studio. Kintech Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. This hour of Canucks Central brought to you by your Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Every Vancouver hockey game gets $5 pints of Molson Canadian or Coors Light, plus weekly prize giveaways all season long at your local Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. The season is winding down, though, and the odds are getting longer for the Vancouver Canucks after a 3-1 loss at the Winnipeg Jets yesterday. It was one of those nights where the Canucks did everything they could. They played a pretty good hockey game, but just lost to a better team, Sat.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of been the story of, the past 10 games for the most part. They played really well.
But the Columbus game was like a little bit of everything.
Yeah, a bit of everything, but they still scored 6 goals.
Yes. The fact that they lost a game in which they scored 6 goals is pretty, it's tough to swallow.
It's funny because you can look at it from a couple different ways. Some people texted in on the post-game show after Columbus and they were saying the Canucks gave up 7 goals in this game.
Yeah.
And they got a point out of it. Take it and run. And the other take is, how do you not get 2 points if you scored 6 goals?
Yes.
So both things are kind of true, but at the same time...
Are you trying to say two things can be true at the same time?
They can.
Okay.
Although I think one is more true than the other.
That's fair.
And that is, you should have won this hockey game, right? You had 2 multi-goal leads in the game, but I digress. But then the Rangers game.
Yeah.
That's the one. Like, they played really well. They should have had 2 points. Like, the deserve to win-o-meter was what? 98% or 95%? So it's one of those games where they probably deserve better. They probably deserve to have 3 more points. But the thing is, deserve doesn't care about the fact that you were putzing around for the first 60 games of the season, and that's the reason why you find yourself where you are.
Hey, man, you come away with 3 more points on this road trip, the extra point against Columbus and the 2 points against the New York Rangers, and, well, you're only 3 points back of the red-hot St. Louis Blues with a game in hand. So it changes the entire situation drastically.
And it should have been. They should have came back 4-1-1.
Yeah.
And if this was in November or even in January, or even in January, you would have been like, you know what? Hey, decent, good road trip. They deserve better.
If you had more runway, you'd be like, you know what? The process was good. If they keep this up, they can they'll be able to... They'll be able to find more success as the season goes on. But instead, because there are, such a few amount of games, just 8 games remaining on the season, you're more like, well, that was fun.
Yeah.
Where was this in November, guys?
It's kind of tough to take off once you're out of runway.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where the Canucks are at, right?
It was a tough one yesterday for the Vancouver Canucks.
So they're cooked, right?
I mean, you said that last week.
I know, but it hasn't changed.
No.
But what if the Wild win?
Wild lose, you mean?
What if the Wild lose?
maybe our next guest can talk you into this one, Sat. Frank Saravalli joins us. He has a presentation of Angry Otter Liquor. Our weekly insider joins us every single Monday. And Sat's trying to talk himself into the Canucks catching the Wild. Frank, do you think it's possible?
Math-wise, it's going to be incredibly difficult.
Yes.
But they're playing in the last game of the season. I want that game to matter.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to require basically near perfection from the Canucks in order for that to happen.
Yeah.
Like, even from a statistical perspective, the Wild are a bit ahead of the Blues. And it's going to be difficult to catch the Blues. Like, you're looking at if... We were doing the math earlier today. If the Blues go 4-3 over their final 7, then the Canucks will need to go 7-0-1.
Yeah.
And that's the nuts. Wild are in a better position than that.
Yeah,
because the Wild still have 8 games to play, and even though they've scuffled a little bit, you know, they've given themselves the opportunity to have this moment in time where they can scuffle.
Well, and we've been saying this for a while. Like, we were joking about this, and we were saying last week they were cooked once Pettersson and Hoglander went out. But it's anytime you have to say you have to win your final 8 games to make the playoffs, it's
probably
not happening.
Yeah.
Well, and look, here's the thing about the Wild, too. At some point over these final 8 games, you're talking about getting back Kirill Kaprizov, who was just finally passed the team scoring lead by Matt Boldy, who has 24 goals now to Kaprizov's 23, despite playing 37 fewer games, and Joel Eriksson Ek, an absolute horse down the middle, that changes the perspective of this team heading into the playoffs. Like, it's just not lining up.
So there's an obvious question that comes to mind here, but like, where did it all go wrong for the Canucks this season? There were so much expectations off the start. Does it really all go back to the Miller-Pettersson beef that kicked off the season and really derailed the first couple of months?
I think so. I mean, if I had to try and pinpoint it, it kind of feels like Halloween was that point in time, like right around there, give or take a week or so. Because by November, we were already well into talking about Miller and Pettersson. And so other than that, I mean, there were some inconsistencies to start. I think we all had a realization, particularly from Rick Tocchet, right out of training camp, that this defense wasn't going to be up to snuff as assembled at that point in time. And that was a roster construction thing, which contributed, but I don't think was really what derailed the season.
Yeah, and you know, looking back, they had some results earlier in the season, but it was kind of smoke and mirrors. You could tell they weren't really playing all that well, and Kevin Lankinen was saving the day, and they were just finding ways to pluck out points. And it really started to go off the rails in November and then really bad in December. And we saw a lot of games where they just got blown out, which, you know, even more recently with all the injuries they've had, there's been a lot of buy-in. You're seeing Rick Tocchet just like get every ounce out of what he has available to him out of this team right now. But early in the season, like that buy-in, that same commitment that we saw all of last year, it just wasn't there. And I think it does speak to what was going on behind the scenes that maybe played a part in all that.
Yeah, and I think maybe the most disappointing part of that is in the middle of it, and yeah, there were some time, of course, missed with injury, but in the middle of all that, you took an absolute all-world season from Quinn Hughes and kind of put it to waste.
Yeah, that's a big thing, too. I mean, when you look at how good he's been, I mean, he's legitimate Hart Trophy candidate type of season for him, and he's probably not going to be in the postseason, and that's a massive shame. But at the same time, like, the future of the Canucks comes down to, can they retain Quinn Hughes long term? And one way to make it easier for you to retain him is probably to retain the head coach that he is very enamored with, and that is Rick Tocchet. And a lot's been made about his situation. I know you've talked about it extensively too, and especially with how much interest there could be elsewhere in Rick Tocchet if he were to become available sometime this season. Financially, because he could be in that type of position where he has a lot of suitors, and the Canucks do have control because they have the option for next year as well to keep the suitors away for the time being, could this be a pretty big number here for Rick Tocchet? And could that be the big thing that gets between the Canucks and him getting a deal done?
You know, I'm really not convinced at the end of the day that it comes down to pure financials. Will that play a part in it? Potentially. But I think at the end of the day, it really revolves around what's the competitive posture and forecast for this team. And when it comes to the machinations and the process by which that roster construction is managed, what kind of confidence does Rick Tocchet have in that process to want to stay? It's as simply put and as blunt as that. And yeah, like, are they going to have to come proper with a legitimate offer? Yeah, but I think first he's going to need to, and I don't know if convinced is the right word, but he's going to need to feel confident that he's going to have an opportunity and a chance to win with the team that he's got. And I don't know that anyone right now at this exact point in time could offer him the confidence required to want to put pen to paper at this exact moment in time. What does the option mean? I don't know. I can't imagine that the Canucks are even going to want to try and hold him to an option or an option year if they, I don't know, don't have an agreement on the other end of it. All you're doing is punting it down the road a year. Mm-hmm. I think the only way that ends in a positive way for them is if it's connected to some sort of longer term agreement. If not, you're right back at square one 8 months from now. And that doesn't really make sense for anyone to have Rick Tocchet starting a second consecutive lame duck season where there's no certainty beyond that.
Yeah, I think it's more about the Canucks reminding people they have control of the situation, because there's been speculation about, the Flyers and other teams being interested in Rick Tocchet. But at the same time, I think you're bang on about it's either an extension or you part ways here at some point in the offseason. But how much of his desire to stay and their long-term vision do you think also evolves around their highest paid player, Elias Pettersson?
Oh, I think there's no doubt that that plays a huge role in it, right? It's not just, is he going to be here? The question is, if he is here, what does he look like? What kind of play can we reasonably expect from him? What level will he be playing at? Is it the 40-plus goal, 100-point guy that we know exists in there somewhere? Is this a guy who will show some of the more timid, hesitant, tentative play that we've seen at times? And beyond that, even if you were to feel relatively confident about the Pettersson that you think you could get or draw out of him again, he needs help. Like, it can't just be Pettersson up front, even though that's what a player of that pay scale is expected to be, the total and complete driver of a team. But up front, it can't just be him and DeBrusque.
No.
You need, what's the status of Besser? How does that play in? I think we're all kind of thinking that it's a foregone conclusion at this moment in time that he's going to be on the move. And if he is, how are you going to find a way to add 25 to 30 more goals to your lineup to replace that? And even if he is there, you're probably going to need another 25 to 30 goals on top of it. So they've got their work cut out for them from a roster construction standpoint, even if they feel like they've figured out a little bit of the defense part over the course of the season.
Yeah, and I'm just not sure. I mean, we've talked about this already, like looking ahead to the offseason, like where are you getting that impact player from? Free agency is scarce with impact players, and you don't have a ton of trade assets unless you're dangling Tom Volander or Jonathan Lekkerimäki to go out and do that in the trade market either.
Agree. And unless you want to get really aggressive and get on the offer sheet front.
Well, and I think the Canucks would have to get their third round pick back in order to be able to do an offer sheet, especially of one of real consequence. But that is always doable if you have the desire to go after a player. But the big question is, who's going to be, in terms of players, going to be available this offseason? Like, do you think a guy like Alex Lafreniere could truly be available this summer if the Rangers miss the playoffs? Could they be looking to make bigger moves? Because he fits the bill of somebody I can see them being interested in. It's just, is a guy like that going to be available via trade?
I don't see any reason why he wouldn't be. I mean, look, I think Chris Drury is one of those guys that, short of maybe an Adam Fox or a Shesterkin, the list of untouchables isn't going to be incredibly long. Like, everything that's not nailed down has a price, and that would include Alexi Lafreniere, who has had a disappointing season, who, you know, was a guy that came on so strong last year in the playoffs and had a great start to the season, got the contract. And, you know, it's one of those things. It's a push or pull. I had this discussion actually with Montreal Canadiens GM Kent Hughes on my Frankly Speaking podcast last week, where I said, you know, a lot of times as fans and media, people think that players, when they sign a big extension like that, that they take their foot off the gas because they're comfortable, and that's where the production sloughs off. And he said a lot of times he thinks, and from his experience, not just as a GM, but as a longtime player agent, that it's more so on the pressure of a player to live up to that deal. And maybe we've seen some of that with Pettersson. Maybe we've seen some of that this year with Juraj Slafkovský, who's turned it around. Maybe we've seen some of that with Alexi Lafreniere, to bring that full circle. So the connection is there, of course, with his original agent and Emily Castonguay working in the Canucks front office. And look, I think the need would certainly be there as well to add someone that can help be with this team for a long time, and provide an offensive boost.
Pew Suter continues to strengthen his case going into free agency. Since becoming the Canucks' number one center with Elias Pettersson out of the lineup, he's played four games, has 8 points in those four games as the Canucks' number one center, playing up to 24 minutes on some occasions during this span. Has he hit the jackpot with the way that he's played this season and certainly lately?
It's fun to think about which player that's a pending free agent has had a more remarkable contract year, kind of out of the clear blue sky, putting up numbers that we didn't necessarily know were possible for them. Pew Suter or Ryan Donato in Chicago, who has 29 goals and 60 points. He's a couple away from doubling his career highs in both categories, goals and points, which is bananas. And you look at Suter's overall track record through the course of his career, he's been a very consistent player, but has kind of never really gotten to this level before that he's reached right now. And I think for both players, it's going to be really interesting to see how the market reacts, because there are guys that have had really good years playing in over their heads in roles that they otherwise never normally would on a really good team, that are going to be looking to cash in. And will the market pay them closer to the level that they're performing at now? Or will they be put back in their place and say, hey, this year was fantastic, but we're not paying you a significant premium based on what your career averages are for both these guys that are a few hundred games into their NHL careers. We kind of know what you are. And you were put in extraordinary circumstances. You delivered. Congratulations. But by the way, Filip Kurashev had 54 points last year and 18 goals for the Blackhawks on a really bad team. Mm-hmm. That's just how life works.
Yeah, and I think Pew Suter was also a free agent a couple of years ago, and there was a soft market for him after after July 1st, and the Canucks got him at a bargain in August, and yep. He doesn't have the size speed profile. We saw there was a pretty soft market for him at the deadline. I mean, the Canucks could have traded him in Besser. They just wouldn't get what they wanted back in return. And that doesn't mean you won't get offers, but, you know, that could be something that I suppose could work in Vancouver's favor if they are willing to wait out the situation and maybe circle back on the guys when you get to free agency.
Yeah, but, okay, so if I'm putting myself in those players' shoes, and I don't know what the offers were to Suter, but I can tell you that the offer to Donato was 3 years at under $4 million, just under. And he decided to bypass it. And look, it's well within his rights to go check out what the market looks like in the summer. And same thing for Suter. But if a team's going to wait me out at that point, I'd rather just go with the new team who believes in me, as opposed to the team that I was already at that didn't necessarily believe in me and want to pay me and wants to see what it looks like 10 days into free agency. I'm just hypothetically saying that. That's just how I think about it personally, if I were going to market.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, Suter up to 22 goals now. We'll see how long he's able to have this continue as the number one center. You know, I know you were writing a bit about goalie interference after the GM meetings recently. Obviously, it's been a big story again over the last couple of weeks. What's your view on goalie interference and how things have played out with some of the situations we've seen over the last week?
I understand why it reaches the point of anger that it does with fans. I understand why players and coaches want to blow a gasket. Mm-hmm. And I also, being someone that is asked about it and talks about it, I just have a way better understanding of it now after being at the GM meetings 10 days ago, because they walked us through the entire process, and I wrote the story, the checklist, and it's like quite literally a formula. Like I could very confidently wager 95%+ success rate. If you gave me a goalie interference review to watch in real time, I can tell you where it's going now. I couldn't do that before. And the truth, and I understand why people are frustrated because they look at it and say, oh, that barely looks like anything. But if you can go through the process of were the goalie's skates in the crease, like was he in the blue paint or was he outside? And then where did the contact come from? Was it deliberate? Was it, you know, coincidental? Like if you work through the entire checklist, you get to a spot where you really begin to understand it a little bit better, which is why I wrote the story. It's an evergreen thing that you can click on kind of in real time and work through it yourself. It may not be what everyone wants it to be, meaning fans or whoever, but in the end, it's the general managers, the stewards of the game, who are responsible for giving direction to the NHL situation room, which then doles out these decisions based on the feedback they get from GMs. And the feedback was overwhelmingly 52 out of 54 plays reviewed that the GMs agreed with how they did it in the situation room. And so with that, like anyone can be upset as they want to be, but the fact of the matter is this is the way it's being called. And unless there's a significant change in direction from the general managers, there's not going to be any change to it.
You can find that at Daily Faceoff. Just look up Frank's recently posted articles and you'll find the goalie interference checklist among his other work. Frank, we always appreciate your time. Thanks for this.
Have a good week, guys.
There is Frank Saravalli, Daily Faceoff, DFO Rundown podcast, and weekly here on Canucks Central. He is brought to you by Angry Otter Liquor. Save $10 on 750 milliliter bottles of Don Julio Blanco tequila this month at Angry Otter Liquor. Find more savings in store today. I know you wanted Rick Tocchet to challenge the second Columbus goal that could have potentially been goalie interference on Saturday.
Yeah, what I felt like at the moment was you won the last one. You have a good PK. You're kind of falling apart.
Yeah.
At least, like, get the break in. It's like calling a timeout. And they gave up the goal afterwards. But, yeah, like, in the moment, I'm like, just challenge it.
Yeah.
You know, you have a good PK. Like, you're kind of falling apart here. Just do it. And they didn't do it. I think it would have been.
They gave up a goal anyways.
Yeah. So it didn't matter, right? But I mean, it's one of those, again, like, it's one of those, like, I disagreed with it.
Yeah.
But I'm not sitting there and saying it's an awful decision because it's a close call.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's the way I viewed it. I don't know if he would have won it, but, like, he does make contact.
Yeah.
Like, he goes into the crease, makes contact, and it comes out, and the shot comes afterwards. It is slight, but it's, like, it happened.
I understand why the penalty is attached to a failed challenge.
Yeah.
But it plays a huge factor into coaches' decision-making in the moment, whether or not to challenge a call that they think maybe borderline, maybe even 60-40, they think they might win it, but it's just, is it worth taking, yeah, in a close game, is it worth taking the extra penalty?
Yeah, what did you think of it? Do you think it was like 50, they would have won it?
I thought they would have challenged it.
Yeah.
In
it
the
was,
moment.
It was close.
Like, yeah.
When I viewed it over and over again, I'm like, yeah, it's really close. Like, I felt, when I saw the first one, I'm like, oh, that's coming back.
Yeah.
I knew right away, as soon as I saw it, I'm like, oh, he clips them. And this one is still contact. It's just,
does it happen in the white ice? And if it happens on the white ice, then it's probably going to be a lost challenge.
Yeah.
And that's where, you know, it's kind of on the edge. It's borderline, so to speak. So you don't know if you're going to win that one.
Yeah. It was a close one, right? I don't know if there is a perfect rule for goalie interference. I know the application.
Kind of like handball in soccer.
Yeah.
You know,
you can change it. You can change the wording as much, yeah, as you want. You're still back in the same position where you're disagreeing,
yes,
about what's a goal and what's a call and what isn't a call. And I think, you know, officiating in and of itself has been problematic this year.
Yeah.
It's more so than usual, right? Yeah. And I do think there are a lot of factors that has led to it. But just strictly in terms of writing a rule for goalie interference, I don't think you can write a rule that's going to please everybody.
No.
I don't think the application is going to be perfect no matter what. So we can fine-tune it all we want, but I don't think we're going to get any closer to being in agreement universally every time it happens.
I think, like, there's obviously situations that, like, the Islanders-Columbus game last week that pop up and you say, really? Like, that's goalie interference? And so you feel that there is some inconsistencies, but most of the time, I think Frank's right. Like, if you go through some of the staples of what is goalie interference, yeah, and the biggest one is, like, did the player go into the blue ice on his own, then you probably have a good chance of it coming back.
Yeah.
And it's been pretty consistent with that sort of mindset going into every goalie interference I've seen recently.
Yeah, you go into the crease, you make contact, you get in the way of a goalie moving freely, it's coming back.
There's always going to be exceptions, and there's going to be ones that make you question it, but I feel like the overwhelming feeling I get away from goalie interference is that more often than not, I kind of understand it now.
Yeah.
Versus what it used to be. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah. Coming up, we'll get to the Open. More on Rick Tocchet and Pew Suter, and also our producer, who had an interesting take today. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, Canuck Central.
Hitting the most important topics for Vancouver sports fans. The People's Show with Vic Nizar. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.